Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine. We appreciate you joining us. We're going to be having some great guests joining us in just a little bit. But right now we have with us on the phone lines our good friend, Wisconsin State Representative Scott Krug, Wisconsin State Assembly District 72 Representative. Scott, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, I'm always happy to be on with you. Come on.
Appreciate the time as always, man. And we hope that you enjoy yourself and have a good time while also getting people informed and getting a lot of information out there that is important to you and your constituents. Always appreciate the time. And I want to come right out the gate because we want to talk Brewers to wrap up. So let's go ahead and do the work first. You recently introduced security measures for ballot drop boxes with another senator in Dan Knobel. I wanted to talk about that and the importance of this, Scott.
Yeah, so, you know, we saw something pop up the last few weeks here where the Supreme Court recognized that the legislature's out of session, so they're going to make some decisions on things as they go through their regular cycle that doesn't match up with ours. One of those happened to be their drop box decision, which overturned their precedent they set in 2022, authorizing drop boxes to be used in municipalities across the state. One of the things that I tried to do during the session when we were actually in Madison all the time was set some standards for drop boxes, because I haven't had an issue with drop boxes in and of themselves. It's just the issue I had was standards being put in place to say, okay, if you're a community that wants to use one, then you have to go through these protocols, and this is how you're going to have to do it. So what Senator Knodel and I did is we put out a bare-bones version of a bill just to start a conversation to figure out what those proper standards could be. So in the meantime, from the day we put out the bill, the Wisconsin Elections Commission came out and provided guidance to all the municipalities. One of the challenges with Wisconsin Election Commission guidance, though, is that it's not the rule of law. So what I'm hopeful of is that we can do some more election bills, perhaps an extraordinary session or special session before Election Day in November, to put some force of law behind either WEC issuance of the guidance on drop boxes or on Senator Knodel and my bill and that version of it, or combine them and just make sure that it's equal across the board, so that the town of Adams is doing the same exact thing as the city of Milwaukee.
Scott, it sounds like you and the senator are doing this in part to kind of get ahead of the curve of possible things that could be an issue. It seems like it's just kind of trying to make sure that all bases are covered here.
It is. And, you know, one of the things that I am very cognizant of are all the lawsuits that happened after the 2020 election. And honestly, I'm not just going to pick on one side, because it did happen in the 08 election and the 12 election and the 16 election. Mm-hmm. Just there were a lot more lawsuits in the 2020 election. So my goal between now and November is to make sure that we touch on any single issue that rises to the top that could be seen as a conspiracy or could be seen as a lawsuit potential, and at least have a discussion about it in our committee, in the legislature, and say, okay, we're looking at this right now. So that by the time it gets to the courts, they'll actually know that the legislature is working on this. Because, James, my biggest frustration with the courts is, you know, whether you're Republican or Democrat, the biggest frustration with the courts for everybody should be that they legislate from the bench, regardless of whatever way they do it, you know, to the left, to the right. That's not their role. Their job is to interpret the laws that are on the books, let the legislature and the governor create the laws, and they should enforce the laws. So I'm, you know, and I talk about this with my ranking member, Lee Snodgrass, the Democrat leading member of my committee, you know, and I tell people all the time, you know, I study politics. I know pendulum swing. One day they'll be in charge. Right now we're in charge. Regardless of whoever's in charge, it should be up to the legislature to set the laws. It should be up to the legislature and the governor to determine what the policies are. It should be up to the courts to follow our lead and say, this is what the policy that's in place does right now, not to create new policy. So that's what we're trying to do, is head off all these issues before Election Day so we can have a conversation ahead of time.
And I think it's an important note. No one should have unchecked power. No one.
Right.
It's part of the beauty of our system is that there is accountability everywhere you look, and nobody, there is no king, there is no dictator. So whether it is that or other aspects of our political system, anybody represented, nobody should be. So again, I think that it's a smart idea to try to get ahead of the curve of some of these things.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that going back, you know, 13, 14 years when I started doing this with Carl, we used to call it our tutorial time, like where we could tell people exactly how things work. And I think one of the things I've forgotten over that time period is that all these new voters and all these new people come into the system after all this time to start talking about these issues for the first time. And I think a lot of the time people fail to understand, you know, the three checks and balances that are in place, you know, between the three branches of government and how each of those interplay with each other and how they can and work with each other a little bit. So I feel like I should go back a little bit more into basics on this tutorial mm-hmm. that we have, and instead of going forward all the time, we might have to take a step back once in a while.
This is very interesting. I guess we have been doing this a while, Scott. I usually have like about 7 or 8 things, you know, bullet points for us to talk about. My number 5, informed voting.
Yeah,
that's what right. I got out there. Right. I love taking advantage of your brain and being able to talk about those things. And that is something we will focus on more. We will get into those more. And especially if you have something you want to lead with or anything, you let me know. Make sure that I can do my homework and we can have a good conversation about it. I'm looking forward to that. I think that's a great idea, man.
Yeah, no, I forget sometimes just to go back once in a while and cover some of the things we used to talk about. So we got to do it, though. We got to do our work.
Yeah, and you know what? Even if it whether it's new listeners or it's, you know, a kid that just turned 18, you know, it's never a bad idea to go over. And in fact, in one of your recent e-letters, you talked about the law known as the 50-piece rule. I thought that would be a good one to go over.
This one drives me nuts, right? I mean, I get why it exists, but let me explain what it is. So say the legislature goes out of session in March in the even number year, which is what we usually do because campaigns start in April and go through November. All up until that time, from election day in the odd year or election day the last even year to the break, we can send out information to our constituents about what we're doing, issues that they're finding important. We can do some surveys, kind of gather input, have a lot more direct conversation with constituents, you know, through our office. The 50-piece rule says by the time that we adjourn our session, we can't give out one single piece of information to more than 50 people in print or say a book or something like that at one time. So like if I have 50 flags in my office and I want to hand out flags to people because it's flag day and we're adjourned, I can't do more than 50. That's my limit. If I have blue books I have to get rid of after we adjourn and I have 50 of them, 50 is a limit, right? So the rule was put in place to deter people from using state resources to campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think one of the struggles with the 50-piece rule that we try to understand is COVID happened during the 50-piece rule.
Mm.
We had a really hard time communicating with people during COVID because of the 50-piece rule at that time. Natural disasters happen when we're adjourned, and it's really hard to communicate with people. Even on my official Facebook page, we can't post on our official state rep Facebook pages because of the 50-piece rule.
Okay, that was going to ask, does it include social media? Okay.
It didn't originally, but courts, again, in their infinite wisdom, have basically ruled that your state resource, which my state Facebook page, not a state resource, it's just a Facebook page. But, you know, my followers on my state Facebook page are different than my Scott Krug followers. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, because not everybody wants to see and hear everything about my family on my regular page. So they go to the Rep Krug page. So then you just get their stuff like that. So mm-hmm. the courts interpreted that there's a difference. So everything we do is either through our campaign side, which we pay for, through either asking people for donations or putting our own money in, or it's on my individual Facebook page, and I skirt the rule a little bit and just tell people this is what's going on in our neighborhood and hope that the court doesn't say anything. So it's one of those really arbitrary, weird rules in the digital age that just I don't think makes any sense anymore.
Yeah, it sounds like it was well-intended when it was first written, but it didn't take enough things in, like, you know, a lot of things in society just didn't take enough into consideration, and how it adapts to the modern age is got to be re-looked at, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that the founders did not think about Facebook when they put together the state constitution.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, okay, I get it, but can we adapt a little bit? So it's one of those things where it's really hard to go back in and make a big change to it, though, because there are some people who do understand and say, well, you're just trying to campaign on state time.
Mm-hmm.
And politicians, public servants, whatever you want to call us, we're cognizant to that. Like, okay, I get it. I don't want to tick you off this time of year. You know?
Right, right.
You don't mess with some things, but we've got to figure out a way to at least create some exceptions for it, at least for things like COVID, natural disasters, and other things we have to be able to communicate, because severe weather season down here, down by the lakes, is no, you know, it should be something I should be able to communicate to people, like, hey, heads up, take cover. I know you don't follow me on my regular Facebook, but here on my state page, we've got problems and I need to tell you about it.
Is this something your colleagues have talked about? Do you think that there could be some movement made with this?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those weird things, because some people would rather just scrap it entirely and some people want to tweak it. But when you start thinking about tweaking it, you've got 400 cooks in the kitchen, then everybody's got a different idea.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same as any other piece of legislation where after 6 years, it'll finally become something real. But it's in the works to change. It just hasn't been decided on how it's going to be changed yet.
We're speaking with Wisconsin State Representative Scott Krug. And Scott, our Olympians are not the only ones who have had to make some room on their shelves for some awards. You recently were awarded the Quill Pen of Excellence Award from the Wisconsin County Clerk Association. I want to get to that one and another one, but what did that one mean to you? Well, first off, why is that awarded? What is it awarded for? And what did it mean to you, Scott?
So I think this one was probably one of the coolest ones, right? In my role taking on campaigns and elections, I knew that it's going to be super contentious, super difficult, super, you know, weird to try to navigate the world we live in, to try to get people back on the right page and talk about policy instead of politics when it comes to elections. And working with our county clerks, we've been able to set some really good standards for conversation, creating new policy, moving things forward, being ready for our next election. So, you know, I can't think of one hearing that we've had in the last year and a half where we haven't had the county clerks come in front of us and start off the conversation, because they're the ones that have to manage all of this stuff. So it was really cool to get an award for them. You know, both Lee Snodgrass and I both got the award because we're setting the standard for being bipartisan, good thought conversation leaders. So that one's one of the best ones I think I've picked up over the last 13, 14 years here.
It gives us an opportunity, too, to shout out our county clerks and how much we appreciate the work that they do.
Yeah, right? I mean, Trent, I mean, I don't know if he's listening because he's always busy, but we've got one of the best. I mean, Trent Miner here in Wood County is actually the president of the County Clerks Association. I mean, so a guy like Trent here in Wood County, whose knowledge is invaluable, is helping guide policy and discussions and bipartisanship with even, you know, big counties like Dane and Milwaukee. I mean, so we don't realize how great we have it here when we have guys like Trent Miner doing his job and helping everybody across the state be able to do their jobs better.
Yeah, I completely agree. And the School Nutrition Association of Wisconsin recognized you as a Legislator of the Year.
Yeah, that one was that was quite a week. So I was up in Hayward for the meeting with the county clerks and swung back through La Crosse the next day to meet with the school nutritionists, because they were happy to see us trying to tackle these issues for hunger in our, like, you know, I have a rural community, right? I represent all rural communities, and I consider Wisconsin Rapids kind of rural yet. Sorry, folks, but compared to other places, it is kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the challenges I've always seen is, you know, when we talk about the issues at school where kids are not able to succeed or achieve like they're supposed to, especially down here in Adams Friendship and, you know, Westfield, you know, Coloma, and, you know, all the Tri-County area where I represent. I mean, it's not because they're not trying. It's not because their parents aren't good parents. It's because half the time they go to school because they haven't eaten, because they're living in poverty, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a student's mind cannot succeed or achieve if it's not fueled. So one of the things I've worked on the last few state budgets is increasing funding for school breakfasts, increasing the reimbursement rates from the federal government for our school lunch programs, just making sure that, you know, kids shouldn't have to worry about where their next meal comes from when they're trying to figure out how to achieve and become our next generation of leaders. So I'm just as excited to meet with the school nutritionists and take on the issues that they find important, because it's something that our communities need.
Yeah, well said. And I have to say that I am a little biased on this one. I was one of those kids. I know what this is like. I know how.
Me too. Yeah, me too. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean,
and
it's hard to say that, you know, there's, you know, you can't just sit here and be a purist all the time and just say, well, their parents should do it. Well, I get that, but we had this conversation even when I passed my financial literacy bill, when I said, how are parents supposed to teach financial literacy to their kids when they never learned it themselves? Same with nutrition and poverty issues. Like, if the parents haven't been able to succeed, were just going to keep their children down in the same rung of the poverty level and just let the, you know, let it be what it is. I'm like, that's just not how America works.
Well, and everything changes. And the idea that, well, it was this way when I was a kid, so it should be this way going forward. No, it changed. It changed before you were even out of school. Things changed from when we were little to when we were older. There's certain things that might stay the same. But for the most part, there's so many different things changing all the time in society that it's important for us to relook at these things. And certainly it's on our representatives to be on the ball on this stuff and making sure that at the very least we're taking care of our kids.
That's the bottom line, right? If our kids don't succeed and our kids can't grow and our kids can't lead, then we're doomed to go down this path that you've seen in different parts of the country, like even the Appalachian story. I'm gonna say it, even a story like J.D. Vance's, not putting it politically, but if you've ever read Hillbilly Elegy, and just hear about the understanding of what it's like to grow up in poverty and to succeed after growing up in poverty, you would have a very different frame of reference on it as a legislator if you lived it. Well, you know, and the story that he tells is, you know, everybody that he's ever run into on those higher rungs when he's achieved or succeeded never understood why he was able to fight as hard as he was. It's because you have to.
Yeah, yeah. Just like you can grow a beard and completely change your politics.
I know, exactly, right? Exactly. That's the part I didn't want to get into.
I know, I couldn't help myself. So, recently, you mentioned you were in La Crosse to be a part of the School Nutrition Association during their annual conference. You mentioned that the award is handed out. Were there other things you all talked about that you thought were noteworthy?
Yeah, I think one of the things is just trying to make sure that the school nutritionists have the level of funding they need overall to run their programs to start, right? It's not even so much about school breakfast and starting the school breakfast programs. It's the fact that we need to be able to have those individuals in school in the first place. So just seeing the, you know, the representatives from each of the school districts across the state of Wisconsin and how many staff were in that room, that was another exciting component of it, is that we're able to fund their schools enough that their school boards find their work good enough that they can actually afford to have these people on staff and help, you know, plan meals and plan activity and plan good, healthy activities and level and habits for kids as they're in the school. So just, you know, that was the thing I took away from the most, is that we're funding them at a level that their school boards feel they can still afford these individuals to be in their buildings.
Scott, I wanted to wrap up certainly with Brewer Talk, but if we have time, I wanted to get to the informed voting part of this. And we have a primary right around the corner, a fall primary, August 13th. We, of course, have a big election coming up in November. The importance of every voter out there being as informed as possible and why that means so much.
Yeah, so a great example of it is the 90% of the time I'm spending this summer is out knocking on doors during primary season for, you know, good Republican candidates on my side of the aisle who are fighting off these challengers, right? I mean, and trying to help everybody understand that what you've got in the mail isn't exactly what the reality is. So that's the conversation I'm having all the way from Hayward all the way down to La Crosse, all the way back over to yesterday, Wauwega, you know, just the nooks and crannies of Wisconsin, just talking to voters to say, hey, what you got in your mailbox or what you're seeing on your TV isn't necessarily reality. Here's what's really going on. So that informed voter part is what I hope to expand on a lot between now and November, where people can get the information they need and go out and do some of that of their own in their own communities and their own neighborhoods and just say, okay, this is reality. Turn off the TV. This is what we need to decide. Are we going to go this way or are we going to go that way? Quit worrying about conjecture. Quit worrying about what somebody said 10 years ago. Quit worrying about anything else that may have changed. I mean, because candidates, like you mentioned before, candidates are changing their mind constantly. So to be an informed voter, you have to know who they were, what they wanted, up until the point they decided to run for something else, and now all of a sudden it changes. So you've got to be able to find your trusted source and spread that word from that point.
Scott, before we let you go, how are you feeling about the Brewers in this second half?
Man, I tell you, I'm always nervous. You know, like they always seem like they're doing great, but they're just arms, or they're short of innings yet. And they went out and got some help at the trade deadline, but it wasn't exactly what I hoped for. So, I'm guessing they'll get to the playoffs, but it'll be a hard task to beat the Atlanta Braves and the LA Dodgers in the National League. And, you know, you get over to the American League, it's going to be even tougher. So I don't see a World Series championship coming this year, but it's still fun to watch, dang it.
You know, one of the things that I wanted to ask you, because I heard this from talking heads a little bit going into the trade deadline and coming out of it, I heard a lot of people kind of saying, well, you know what, I just don't think I'm going to see a Brewer World Series in my lifetime. And I thought that was crazy talk. I'm not a diehard Brewer fan or anything, but to me, I've gotten to see the Chicago Cubs win a World Series. All bets are off. Like, there's no reason anybody couldn't win one. It actually hurt me because I got so many people that mean a lot to me that are diehard Brewer fans. I don't like the idea of that. Ever hit your brain? Have you ever thought that?
So being as old as I am now, I actually have in my lifetime seen them play in the World Series. So I don't know if I'll ever see them win them, but I've seen them play in it. So I'll take that. But I, you know, in this day and age of big money and small market competition, I don't see it anytime soon. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could have the best farm system in the world and you could make the right trades at the trade deadline, but it's only going to get you so far when you're competing against a $150 million payroll. So,
yeah,
you know, if you get to the point where you have a salary cap of some sort in baseball, I think the entire country would be better off because baseball could bring us all back together instead of turning us away from each other. And
yes,
I just think that's what baseball's always done,
mm-hmm,
and it always could if they would change a little bit. So change a little bit besides putting a runner on second in the 10th inning,
yes,
and making the bases bigger. Other changes.
Yeah,
right.
Couldn't agree more. A salary cap is long overdue in that sport. And I will say, nobody had Arizona or Texas in the World Series. I mean, you just never know. I don't look at any pitching staff in baseball right now, and they scare me. It's more of like, I'm more scared of my own team and who they're going to throw out there. So, you get into the playoffs, all bets are off. We'll see what happens. Scott,
if you get Yelich back and Yelich is healthy down the stretch or in the playoffs, I think you have a chance if you keep playing like you used to. So
agreed. Always a good informative conversation with you, sir. Thank you so much for the time and what you do for our communities. If people have follow-up questions, want to get in touch with you, Scott, how can they do that?
Yeah, it's easy. It's cell phone's easy. It's 715-323-3293.
We appreciate you, Scott. You have a good weekend.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
And we'll have more Midday Magazine coming up for you right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR. We are locally grown radio.